It's Hallmark for Murder, the podcast for people who are basic enough to love Hallmark movies, but not so basic that you don't need a plot. Do you need a mindless escape from our global hellscape right now? But also need some semblance of a plot to follow? We see you. I'm Kat.
I'm Sarah.
And today we're talking about Crossword Mysteries, A Puzzle to Die For. And Crossword Mysteries is a series starring Lacey Chabert. What is your history with Lacey Chabert?
I specifically maybe only know her from the Mean Girls franchise.
Oh, okay.
Which isn't a franchise, now that I'm thinking about it. So, what's yours?
Well, I did watch Party of Five back in the day as a casual follower. And then of course, I saw Mean Girls, and there was that sort of her phase of going from a child actor to I'm an adult now, and I can do adult things. I resisted for a very long time when I saw that Crossword starred her, and then like. Lacey Chabert is like one of the maybe the princess of Hallmark movies. I would say Candace Cameron Bure is the queen.
Okay.
Lacey Chabert is maybe the princess or the duchess. So she's in a million.
She has
Hallmark
a real
movies.
Duchess energy.
She does. And I avoided all Lacey Chabert movies when I got into Hallmark movies. I could not do it. My friend would like recommend all of them to me and tell me how great she was. I just avoided, especially Crossword Mysteries. For like the last mystery series I watched. And then I fell in love with Lacey Chabert, as the rest of America has, and find her to be incredibly charming. It's all inexplicable. I don't understand what her ineffable charisma is made of exactly, but I have fallen for it. I love her. I watch all her movies. And this is, I think, my favorite of all of the mystery series.
I have yet to fall for her.
Okay.
But maybe with time,
yeah.
Our love will grow.
Yeah, no, I don't think it was immediate. I think it definitely blossomed over time.
And I know this like wasn't her choice, but I was very distressed by her outfits in this movie.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get into that then. Wow. Okay. All right. Conflict already.
This one's going to be spicy.
Real spicy. Yeah. Okay. So this series is co-created by Will Shortz, who's the crossword editor of the New York Times, puzzle master for NPR's Weekend Edition Sunday, editor of Games Magazine, and founder and director of the American Crossword Puzzle Tournament. Okay. Apparently I did do some research on him.
Yeah. And his name ends in a Z. Don't know if that's real, but...
Oh, I was thinking that was intentional, but that's Scrabble. That would be really meaningful in the Scrabble game.
Yeah.
Not a crossword.
Right, no. Puzzle. Okay. Yeah.
And he does do a cameo, I think, and we think it was...
Ping Pong Man. I mean,
table tennis.
Table tennis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a very belabored scene that had to have been a cameo.
Yeah, I was shoehorned in there pretty hard for no reason.
Yeah. We start out with an art museum where someone has broken in and removed some paintings. Some of the paintings are lit and some are not. So the spot where the painting was is still lit up, and that's how we're supposed to... I was confused by this art museum. But the director or somebody comes in and basically does the classic... Oh, it's you that all victims in these mysteries will say before they die. And then he did the oh face. And then there's a reason that this guy did not get any lines. He gets shot and really goes for it in his death scene. And I'm sure that his family had a really nice evening sitting around watching his death scene.
I hope so, because they shot him 3 times in the chest. He fell forward. But then in the final scene of his death, he was on his back. But the blood wasn't smeared, so there was no rollover situation. Uh-huh. It was just, I think he must have thrashed a lot in like the whole intermediary part, and then they just cut all of that and just were like, you on your back with three bullet holes, very tidy, relatively bloodless bullet holes in your heart, the largest blood pumping organ that you have.
Very Murder, She Wrote, like very little blood in any of their crime scenes.
We just, it's tasteful gore.
Yes. Something for the grandmother.
Yes.
So Crossword Mysteries is supposed to be set in New York City. So of course it's filmed in Toronto. And Lacey is doing her city walk classic and doing her best to seem like a professional adult in the big city. It's not her fault that she looks so young. She's actually not that young. She's actually, I think she's 38-ish maybe, but she still just looks really young. Not her fault. She looks great. We get an intro for her character by various people stopping to tell us about her job as a crossword editor for the New York Sentinel. And we also get a poster that announces her as the host of a crossword tournament, in which she pauses right next to, because Hallmark assumes that either we're not very smart or that we're folding laundry while we're watching the movie.
Which some of us were, for the record.
Yeah, so they really have to hit that kind of stuff hard. And then we head to the museum and meet the detective on the case, Brennan Elliott, who's looking very young.
I thought his name was Logan O'Connor.
Well, Brennan Elliott's the actor.
Oh, okay.
Who, as a, you know, a lover of the Hallmark universe, I'm very familiar with him as an actor because he's a regular.
Quick question. Does he remind you of any specific dog breed? Because this was the first thing that I thought of when I saw him.
Maybe, but I think as we go along these movies or you see other, like, more recent films with him, he will probably resemble that dog breed even more.
The Borzoi breed, that's what it is.
Because he, this wasn't filmed that long ago. I probably should have looked up what year this was, but I don't want to say he hasn't aged well. He has aged a lot. He still looks, of course, extremely handsome, as men do as they age, for the most part. But I did feel like, whoa, he's like baby.
It was sort of like an energy / nose situation going on for me with this breed.
He's also, I feel like, most known for his acting style is where he, while he's speaking, delivering his lines, he looks slightly in the other direction.
Huh.
Which I think actually works.
The Brennan Elliott School of Acting?
Yes.
Okay. I'll take notes.
I find it very effective. It gives off the air of, this guy is very cool. He doesn't care too much, but then you find out later that he does care. And that's when you really fall in love.
Yeah.
But at first, he's got to be the tough guy. He's Detective Logan O'Connor. And apparently his dad is the chief of police and...
And has like an eating disorder?
Yeah. Something's going on there. Yeah.
I don't know. Logan's a little hypervigilant about his dad's food intake, but not the specific food. So I don't know. Like, is it a cholesterol thing?
He has high cholesterol.
Is his dad a binge eater? We don't know.
We learn later he has high cholesterol.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Security system at the museum was down for repairs, and we get an extraneous detail that the assistant Carmichael is in Florida on vacation. So again, in case we're really like we're taking the laundry out of the dryer, we can still catch that detail for later. The intruder came into the museum by skylight, somehow got like squeezed through this little, like pried open one of the skylight panels and then like shimmied down on a rope, which when we find out later who the murderer is.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, but also, yeah, it just doesn't look like he could be doing any squeezing and shimmying. But also, like, where did he anchor the rope?
Oh, wait. I don't know if we want to spill the beans too early. But there's two separate people here, now that I'm thinking about it. So did both of them shimmy through the skylight? Or did the second person come in a different way?
Yeah, a lot of plot points really went over my head the three times again that I watched this.
Well, last time we did this, you like dismantled the entire plot like in the first 30 seconds of the film.
Yes,
so that's true. Not happening this time?
No, this time I was fooled.
Okay.
Yeah. Partially, I think, due to poor writing. Sorry. Yeah, we'll not see.
Oh,
poor.
Okay, so sorry. We skipped Whodunit. Like
Whodunit.
The movie.
Yeah.
This is written by Greg Rosen and Brian Sawyer, and the story is by Will Shortz.
Okay.
But they wrote the teleplay.
Okay.
So I don't know if we threw that in there just to insult them. But maybe these things will be resolved as we slowly muddle through the plot.
Yes.
So the oil painting that's stolen is called The Third Duke of Dorset's Hunter with Groom and Dog, which is a real painting.
Ooh.
I kind of thought for sure that it was based on, I literally Googled painting with really long name, dog, horse. And actually, this was actually the real painting.
Oh, wow. Wow.
It was painted by George Stubbs in 1768, and it's at the Met.
Okay.
So that's an interesting choice that they chose a real painting that exists out there in New York City.
I guess they had to be able to get access to it for the movie.
Did we ever see it?
Yeah. I think this is in the opening shot.
Panned
across a couple of paintings, froze on that one. Then you saw them like take it off the wall.
Okay. So George Stubbs is known for his accurate portraits of wild animals, dogs, and most notably horses that appealed to prominent sporting enthusiasts. I couldn't find the value of the painting, but it did find out that you can buy a pair of socks with the painting on them.
Logan found out that the painting is worth upward of $1 million at some point during the movie.
Okay. So maybe that's accurate.
I have no reason to not believe him.
He was just offhandedly like delivered his lines off to the side. So you found him to be very credible.
Yeah. It was like an aside and I was like, oh, well, that just seems like knowledge that he has.
Yes. That is his trick.
Oh, by the way, that painting's worth upwards of $1 million. I'm turning my head.
The victim had an unfinished crossword puzzle, I thought, in his back pocket. But then later on I was like, well, why would the victim have it in his back pocket? Was it just sort of strewn about the crime scene? Was he saying that it fell out of the killer's back pocket? How would they know that? I don't know. Anyways.
I think Alan Nightingale, the victim, had it in his back pocket when he died.
But does that make any sense? Because isn't it?
Not really. Nor the fact
that the thief would have had it. But why would he have brought it with him?
Well, I think we'll get there. I have a little, maybe small understanding of that. But why, if it was in his back pocket and he was shot 3 times in the chest, was there not a speck of blood on this newspaper?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, my first thought was, who fills in crossword puzzles in cursive?
Oh, you and Lacey, same wavelength.
Mm-hmm. So back at the Sentinel, Tess has the most awkward work setup ever, where they put what looks like 2 information kiosks across from each other. And she's the crossword editor and has an assistant. But for some reason, the desk across from her, like 4 inches from her and across from her, is the guy who has the crime beat. And the assistant, crossword assistant, is her information kiosk is somewhere else in the building. And then she has an unnecessary interaction with her assistant wherein she points out a typo and then says she'll fix it herself because she's too nice and looks on the bright side of things. But does that seem nice at all? Like, as soon as she immediately pointed out the typo, like, I started to sweat. My stomach started to feel funny. Like, a truly conflict avoidant, people pleasing, nice person would never have mentioned the typo.
No, it was a little passive aggressive. Which I think fits
okay
for her.
But I thought the whole point of that whole interaction was, I think, supposed to paint her as like a happy-go-lucky, generous optimist or something
like
that.
Yeah.
But I feel like it went kind of awry. Also, how is she going to fix a printed hard copy? Like, why wouldn't the assistant have just, like, gone back to, like, change it and reprint it? Anyways, the whole scene was, like, what I'm just, like, so perplexed. Like, why is this scene happening? What is the purpose behind the scene? Are they pulling, maybe they're just not pulling it off. Anyways, side note, I am currently going through our archives out my office because we're moving soon and we're doing a retrospective video on our 50th anniversary. And I've become obsessed with old school secretaries.
Oh.
Like just the...
Like their bosoms?
Just the details. Oh. Like it was their whole job was just to like get stuff like that right and like take dictation. There's like carbon copies of letters and... Like to like create files and just like make everything so organized and easy to find and so thorough. Like it's just like a level of ease and like I feel like I'm constantly and everybody's just constantly trying to like get by and just get things done as quickly as and efficiently as possible. But this was like an era where like we just had these extra women around to like take care of all of our needs. I say our. We would have to be men.
Yeah.
For that have that. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I'm really obsessed. Apparently Josephine is not in that tradition. She just says, no. Okay. And walks off to her corner somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
We also get another seemingly random discussion on the age of the fading press, which we had in our previous movie as well.
Oh, that's right. Because all these women are newspaper
I guess associated. I was wondering like is it because most Hallmark heroines are like successful newspaper or magazine career women and Hallmark has to address that they know it that's unrealistic or is it because most of their viewers are older and lament the digital age and want things to return to the good old days which includes myself since I'm a 90-year-old woman trapped in a younger body.
And you don't have a Rolodex, but you wish you did.
Actually, I did find in these archives, I found the previous director's Rolodex, and I'm kind of hanging on to it just because it's fun.
Yeah.
Like, I really like it.
For sure.
So it turns out that the murder victim was a good friend of Tess's Aunt Candace. Tess and Candace are eating lunch at Chez Michel. Very fancy. And she waits until they've already been seated to squeeze her hand awkwardly over the flower centerpiece and offer condolences.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That was very notable for me. I called it the white lady wasp grief grasp in my head, where you just sort of like, it's not even the full hand. It's mm-mm. Like finger pad to finger pad. I'm so, so sorry that your extremely close friend has died. Let's go ahead and order before we continue to talk about this.
So I'll get to that. Alan and his wife, Veronica, got divorced in the last year. And Candace was forced to take sides. And she chose Alan because they shared a passion for opera and the arts. And I have never talked about a friend this way. But I hope to one day tearfully recall that Sarah and I shared a passion for the Case File podcast and Aldi grocery stores.
We do, yeah. And badly imitated Australian accents.
Mm-hmm. Which you would not do. I still hope that one day you will do your Case File impersonation.
It'll happen.
I do love also that even though Candace is full on crying and pouring her heart out, Tess is like, let's eat first and then you can tell me about your dead friend.
Tess is pretty like good at just information digging. I feel like that's a aspect of her character that we're supposed to be kind of like, oh, she's so plucky. She's like really wants information. She's like a real, like she's always after Logan, like, haha, you can't avoid me this time. Logan, listen, I'm leaving 11 voicemails. What's going on? We'll get there. But with her aunt, who presumably maybe like seems to be really a mother figure for her, and also a psychologist, we learn later, she's very like clinical in her relationship. Is a little bizarre.
Yeah, I actually find that frustrating about several of our Hallmark mystery heroines, like can be a little too like in their digging for information and their pluckiness can be very like abrasive and like inconsiderate and just like not able to acknowledge the humanity of the situation because they're just sleuthing.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them are better than that others. I think Amy from Mystery 101 really toes that line really well.
Amy does, yeah. Amy's got that like heart of fiction.
Very warm.
Yeah, very warm.
Very caring. You really get that she cares. I did not judge Tess too bad for this because I felt like that's something that I would do too. Like, I really want to talk about this with you, but can we order our food first? And then you can tell me about your dead friend. I felt like...
I just know that this is a conversation that you and I will actually have IRL in vive at some point in our lives. Yeah.
But I'll give you a full-on hug. We don't need to do the
white
pads.
Lady wasp grief grasp.
Okay, so I hope that smooths that out a little bit.
Yeah, it will.
So Tessa's aunt is played by Barbara Niven, who is literally in 85% of all Hallmark productions. Most notably, she's the mother in another mystery series, Murder, She Baked, which would be confusing, except she's sort of the same character in both.
Yeah, she has pretty much like baker mom vibes.
Well, she's not a baker. She's like a real high energy, like just like Candace, like mover and shaker about town.
She zips around.
Mm-hmm. Supportive older lady in the young heroine's life who cheers her on, but is also hot and vivacious enough to get some older gentleman A herself, which she tries in this.
Oh yeah, she does.
Mm-hmm. So that's pretty, I think she's also in like Chesapeake Shores, which I've never watched. So I don't know if she varies in her supportive older woman role, but. Back from their lunch, our leads have their meet cute at the coffee stand, where you know that they're butt heads because their coffee orders are different.
A little different.
Well, she gets a mocha because she's fun and sweet and a little sassy, and he gets black coffee because he's a toughie.
Yeah, a New York City cop.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The streets of Times Square.
And at least on my end, their sparky banter is off the charts. I don't know if you were feeling any of the burn from their sparks.
I sensed no chemistry at this point. I did like really his like line about punctuality is also a virtue really resonated with me.
Hmm.
And so I was kind of like, yeah, it is.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe I'm Tess and I'm Logan.
That maybe.
Because as usual, I was approximately 5 to 10 minutes late for this podcasting session.
Well, I expected it. I wasn't mad.
I was downstairs ordering a mocha because I'm fun.
And I was chugging black coffee all day because I'm jittery.
Tess also thinks it's weird that someone would do a crossword in cursive.
Yeah. Bada bing.
She calls Logan a Monday puzzle, the easiest one of the week, and I really wish my career allowed me a quippy categorization of people. Yes. Yours kind of does.
Like, oh, mine definitely does.
Okay. Do you do that at work?
Yep. I sure do.
He's such a... bicameral, what is that one called?
Oh, bimanual extraction. Were you going for bicameral legislature? No, bimanual extraction.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and typically, like, I guess I could say that. I guess we mostly just categorize our patients against each other. I don't really think about people outside of my life related to work. Mm. But yeah, that sometimes patients are real B words, mm-hmm. and we have a couple different categories of them. Maybe it's just me, actually. I don't know. A lot of this goes on in my head, which is probably for the best.
Taz is attending a meeting of volunteers for the crossword tournament, and the sharply dressed old guy who's running it is having all the feels about stepping down and letting Tess run it. He makes some dramatic remarks and hands over a ceremonial pen. And Tess awkwardly hugs him and people give some pity claps. I had a really hard time watching that scene.
Yeah, it was bad.
I was trying to, I volunteer for my local friends at the library, and I was trying to imagine a similar changing of the guard for the volunteer who runs the book sales. But I could be projecting because I recently stepped down as board president with zero fanfare. And no one thanked me for 5 years of service. So I kind of feel like I should have forced this kind of ceremony with like some kind of ceremonial.
I think you
book.
Should have lit a. Can you light books on fire? Is that
we don't,
still allowed?
No, we don't do no? that in libraries. Okay. No, it's right? very frowned upon.
Okay.
Censorship.
Well, what if it had mold on it?
Oh, we do. Yeah, we do. If it has mice droppings in it, that could have passed something like that along.
We could have lit that on fire and passed it to the next person.
Mm-hmm. And then I could have gotten some pity claps.
Yeah. Maybe even the hantavirus.
And made the new president hug me.
Mm. Only if you wanted that.
Although he wasn't actually there at that meeting. So I had to keep I had to keep being president for that meeting. This is why we Hallmark.
This is why we Hallmark. That's like the time that a VIP patient at work fired me from being her nurse, which I was grateful for, by the way, said B word from earlier, the aforementioned B word. And then, unfortunately, there wasn't another nurse to take my place Ooh. For about 2 hours. So I had to keep being her nurse. and in that moment, I had all the power. It was wonderful. And that's not my typical nature at work, just for our listeners. It was a real isolated circumstance.
Okay. Well, I look forward to hearing about this VIP patient off the air.
Oh, for sure.
Okay. So did anything happen at that meeting other than the awkward ceremony?
Yes. We met Elizabeth and Alexander, who are the new volunteers, could not look more suspicious or mismatched as a couple.
I thought they were brother and sister.
Yes.
For the longest time.
They looked like fraternal twins. It was so not. It was a little unappetizing. But yes, so we meet Elizabeth and Alexander. We're sure to like point them out as like, check out our new volunteers. Mm-hmm. And they're like beaming and smiling. but just like could not look more guilty and suspicious just right off the bat for me.
Yep.
Personally.
And then Tess right away shuts the meeting down and is like, all right, I'll see y'all later at the hotel.
Everybody get
out. Setup.
Yeah.
Like what was happening there?
Oh.
this could have been an email.
It could have been an email with like a little gif of a pen being passed from one hand to the next. we forgot whenever we first met Harris, the crime beat reporter, Tess was like giving us a little display of her crosswording creation skills. And she was like, I need a word, 8 letters, second letter O, other letter, whatever. And then she's like looking around her office and she sees a man in a corduroy jacket. And she's like, ooh, corduroy, and types it in. And it was an across clue. And all of the up and all of the, is it called up and down clues? Vertical?
Down and across.
All of the down clues didn't match with the word corduroy. There were words like E-C-S-E.
Well, because then she picks loiterer, and those are not the same. It didn't have the same letters.
I think you're right. And I also think that, but I think that the part that drew my attention was when she typed in corduroy, she looked at it in a way that I couldn't tell if it was like the Botox that was that was confusing me with her reaction to this word, but it seemed like she just didn't like the word corduroy, and not that she noticed that there were like five mistakes in the down clues. I just wanted to point that out. Actually, corduroy and loiterer, it was second letter O, sixth letter R, or something like that. And so those do have the same.
Yeah, I didn't go back and watch it, but I felt like a little bit of a dum-dum crossword-wise in this whole, like I clearly could tell that an actual crossword puzzle put this together because...
Will Shorts. Yeah.
Shorts.
Will Shorts.
Because I was a little lost on some of it. I think I definitely wasn't.
A lot of in-jokes. A lot of crossword puzzle in-jokes.
Mm-hmm. Puzzle heads, apparently. So back at police HQ, the O'Connors have a murder board going. Actually, they have several murder boards. With a nice business shot of the victim, like a nice headshot. And I did actually check IMDb to see if that's the actor's actual headshot.
Oh.
But it's not.
Oh.
They took that just for the... But it looks a real, like, would go great on LinkedIn.
Oh, wow.
Logan goes to check for security cameras and meets an overly friendly barista that he connects with over her very conspicuous materials draped over the checkout area. I don't know if you, when you were in school, did you have a big book that just said, like, medical textbook?
No, I had a lot of books online. Like, they make a lot of digital textbooks nowadays. Mm. I did feel like we got a really good insight into Logan's interrogation process in this scene where... He's like, ah, med school, huh? And she's like, how did you know? And he's like, well, it's pretty obvious. You've got the textbook, blah, blah, blah. Must be hard, blah, blah, blah. And so he's like, and she's just like lapping it up. She's like, mm-hmm. Oh, my God. And then he's like, anyways, what do you know about the deceased? She's like, well, I just can't wait to tell you everything. Mm-hmm. And they were just really setting that up for us to like see his like, I'm going to just do a little softball pitch here. You're going to catch it. You're going to throw it back to me. And then I'm going to like hit it really hard.
It's a little that Logan charm.
Yeah.
That I personally would fall for as well.
Yeah, I liked it. It worked. It works for me.
Also, I was excited about the Danish and the coffee. That sounded really, really delightful to just sit in a cafe. And
maybe one day we'll be lucky enough to do that. Yeah.
She lets him know that the victim was stressed and not tipping well lately. So we should infer from that he's having serious financial difficulties. But he still does come to the cafe to get his daily diner fix or whatever, but he just doesn't tip as well.
Or he's protesting the low wages in the American service industry. That's a like line of thinking that Logan didn't really go down, but... Mm-hmm.
Logan does figure out, using some forensics know-how, that the time of death was 2 hours after the break-in, which seems like a big deal, but couldn't he it just like taken the guy 2 hours to die?
No.
Okay. With three GSWs?
With three GSWs right to the heart.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty instant.
Okay. So Tess thinks that the crossword the victim was filling out left clues about the murder, but Logan is not buying it. Sarah, how did you feel the first time you saw Tess Harper's signature leather moto jacket? Paired, of course, with ultra feminine details like a blousy skirt and stiletto heels.
I hated it.
Oh, God.
A lot.
Oh, boy.
That dress was the... entirely wrong length on her. The heels were pumps, which is just...
Oh, really?
I mean, they had like closed toes.
Oh, okay.
It was awful. And then the jacket was like pointy and had unnecessary zippers.
Of course.
It wasn't for me. And I also felt like it just wasn't for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I was not liking it.
Wow. All right. Well, I guess we'll continue. Logan is not as mesmerized as I am, and neither is Sarah.
This is why, yeah, maybe I am Logan. Okay. This is all making a little more sense.
So Tess has to follow up on her own leads herself, which takes taking Harris with her, where we learn that Logan has solved more cases than anyone else on the force of, like, the NYPD?
Or his precinct?
Maybe the precinct.
Maybe the precinct.
Is that the force? Maybe it's the precinct?
Possibly. Maybe we should have asked. No, I don't want to talk to any cops.
Okay. The woman who submitted the crossword, because did you know that people, like random people, submit crossword puzzles? I didn't know that.
I did not know that. I was pretty surprised that she could let someone else do her job. But then I realized she's also the puzzle editor. Mm-hmm. So that does make sense title-wise.
So she does that process where she looks at the word and goes,
But
and then looks around the room for another word.
Can't quite bring her eyebrows together.
So the address that this woman who submitted the crossword puzzle with the clues, the address she gave is a funeral home, which has just gone out of business after 47 years. Which is a really odd detail.
That never really goes anywhere. Yeah.
Tess goes back to the tournament, which is taking 6 days to set up for. Did they reserve this ballroom for 6 days? Do you know approximately how expensive that would be?
Well, an Upper West Side psychologist has connections, Kat. So.
Do you think that means she got the ballroom for free for 6 days?
Well, maybe for free for the setup. Because she sort of wields some kind of like blackmail as a psychologist on all the people of the upper crust. Oh, whoops. Pulled from a future plot point of the movie.
Okay.
But yeah.
So during this never-ending setup, we do learn more about the two young puzzle heads who were sitting around in the ballroom for all that time looking suspicious. When asked where they're from, they answer the ocean. Because they're yachters.
Yachters.
Then they give too many details about their former Victorian cottage and make a slip up about Newport, which the fancy old guy catches right away because his name is Pierre.
Yep.
So, of course, he knows.
All about.
Don't you mean
Bradley Beach?
Yes.
Who, me? I don't know. Newport Beach.
Tess and Candace go to Alan's memorial, where his former art dealer, Elaine, gets to deliver some savage takedowns before immediately sauntering away, even though initially she was flagging down Candace to get her attention. So, like, was she just, like, dying to talk crap about the dead person? Needed, like, oh, there's somebody that I can... Oh. I've been formulating these takedowns in my head, but I need somebody to... deliver them to. So I'm going to walk across this room, flag this woman down, drop the mic, and then just immediately leave.
Maybe she regretted her actions a little bit and was embarrassed and left because of that.
She's like in a different area shoots down Logan.
That's right.
So she sticks around the funeral. She just like...
That's right. She's probably delivering the same takedowns to the rest of the funeral attendees.
Yes.
Just to see, like, which demographic it lands with.
Okay, you're right. She probably had to go off to go deliver those lines to someone else.
What was that thing that she said? The first thing she said? He's not worth the salt of my loins. No, that wasn't it. But that's not a takedown. I don't know what that means. But it was something real, like...
Multiple sick burns.
Yeah.
Like, she just kept going.
She was, Yeah. She said, he's dead and I'm going to poop on his grave right now.
So we find out that Candace is a Park Avenue therapist with a best-selling self-help book that I probably would have read.
Definitely.
At least the first chapter.
We also find out that Candace has no problem seductively talking to men she's just met.
Oh, at a funeral of her.
At a funeral of her best friend, apparently.
Yeah, she flirts real hardcore with Logan before she realizes she's at a funeral And then she switches gears really quick and becomes very serious about her dear friend.
Right. Yeah.
And the passions that they shared.
The opera.
And the arts.
The arts. The opera is not included.
I guess. So Logan also has a casual chat with Carmichael in front of that huge business shot of Alan again. And he also talks shiz about the dead person in front of the huge portrait
of the dead person. That's right.
I believe firmly that Carmichael is the best actor in this movie.
That's exactly what I thought, too. I was watching it again this afternoon before this session, and I was like, Carmichael, dang, you are good.
I looked him up. He stars in a movie called Faith Heist.
Oh, no.
Can I read you the description of Faith Heist?
Yeah, but just let me take a breath. Okay.
When a charismatic preacher finds his church in financial ruin after being swindled by a shady financial advisor, he rallies members of his congregation to pull off a heist to get their money back and save the church before it's too late. There was one review on IMDb, I think, that said this one's for the whole family.
Oh.
If you want some laughs.
And you want your baby to laugh.
There's also, and grandma, there's also a sequel, Faith Heist, A Christmas Caper.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I'm ready to
Carmichael's bigger than that, but.
Well.
We'll see.
He's got to start somewhere. He also was a bus driver. His list of credits was unique. So we're rooting for you. His name was Jonathan Langdon. I did not write it down, but for some reason I remember that.
Hmm.
Tess thinks that the fake info for the puzzle writer is a puzzle itself. So the funeral home plus a bar called the Silver Cat, that was the phone number the crossword puzzler gave, equals curiosity killed the cat.
Mm-hmm.
Would you have gotten that?
Nope.
Logan still does not take her seriously, but he better watch out because she's about to unleash another amazing leather jacket, this time in pink.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts? Again, you're still...
Your
heart is shut down.
Yeah, it was really... The enchantment didn't hit me, this movie, for her outfits.
Why is the setup for this tournament taking so long?
Yeah, it appears to be like six long tables and some pens and like foldable cardboard partitions, which doesn't really vibe with the grand ballroom theme.
Uh-uh.
More vibes with like the Second Baptist Church back bingo parlor. But here we are 6 days later.
Mm-hmm. Still going. Tess goes to Alan's ex-wife's bakery to make pointed comments. And as usual, all it takes is one O to get this woman to give lots of personal details about her marriage. And of course, talk crap about the guy who just died.
Yeah.
Which people love to do.
She should have gone to the funeral. She would have met she would have been a good audience for Elaine.
She would have. Why didn't she go to the funeral now that you say that? Oh, because she was scared?
She was up all night cooking pie?
She was being blackmailed or something?
Oh, yeah, that was really confusing later on.
Harris had not died by that point. He died after the funeral.
Harris died after the funeral, yeah.
So I don't know why she didn't go.
Huh.
As she told Logan, though, she did say, I've got a bakery to run.
Get out of my life.
So she was about to give a ton of personal details, even more, to Tess. But then Logan walks in and interrupts the tea spillage. And for some reason, Logan is just now coming to question the victim's ex-wife.
At her place of work.
Mm-hmm.
By himself.
Yes.
Weird, because detectives usually have.
Mm-hmm. And he does have a partner, that old guy. Who literally has no lines, and I decided was Lacey Chabert's grandfather.
Yeah, he just needed a little day job.
Yeah, or he just like always either wanted to be Columbo, or wanted to be the guy who played Columbo. Mm-hmm. Like, he clearly, like, he just sipped a lot of coffee and nodded a lot. So that, I think that was supposed to be his partner. It was really just sort of like someone for Logan to sort of explain things.
Yeah.
So that we could hear it.
Yeah.
As the audience. But yeah, no, he's by himself to talk to probably who would be like the main suspect in this murder. He's finally willing to listen to Tess. So he takes her back to the precinct for some eating on camera.
Yes.
Which also
tart.
I should note that I love Brennan Elliott in a lot of Hallmark movies. He always seems to eat, and he's a terrible on-screen eater. Like, oh. I have to fast forward every time.
Oh, no.
They also have a really amazing whiteboard session, which is my favorite thing.
Oh, Lacey Chabert's last name is French-ish, right? It's Frenchy of some sort.
Yeah.
But when she tries to pronounce that French phrase on the box,
oh.
I mean, it was a little butchered.
Oh, okay.
It's weird.
I wouldn't be able to tell.
Okay. So let's move back to Logan's on-camera eating.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, the whiteboard.
The whiteboard. Someone had already written some stuff with very cute handwriting. And I kind of wanted to know.
Maybe the old guy. Maybe that was his job.
Is that the old guy's? The chief of police has really cute handwriting?
Yeah.
Tess proves that the crosswords are leaving clues for art thefts. And the chief seems to believe her. Tess and Logan have dueling leather jackets in this scene. So I don't know if maybe you liked his more.
I actually don't recall his leather jacket. I think the leather jacket theme maybe just was lost on me.
Okay. In the scene, they do make a reference to the Unabomber being caught with linguistic forensics, which I thought lent a nice touch of reality.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of like, it was like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, all right.
This is real.
Yeah, this is could happen.
Yeah. Although I did like have this sort of overarching sense throughout this movie that like art heists are just a fairly like elitist crime, and I just couldn't really connect with anybody caring at all about art heists. I don't know. Because like there was that one line when Harris was like, Logan, do you think that this art heist is connected to the string of art thefts that have been occurring over the last few years in the city? And Logan was like, maybe, I don't know. But those are like two different divisions of investigations even. And I don't know. Art heist is just elitist. And I found it a little weird.
Yeah, those crimes have never interested me either. Like documentaries or stuff like that kind of never on my radar.
Yeah.
It does seem like Logan would have been more interested in it because he used to be in the art theft division.
Right.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to care until somebody gets killed,
right.
Which is fine. Tess, again, has to go back to the hotel because they're still setting up. And she has to be there we don't know why. The Yachters are still just hanging around.
Lurking.
Until the guy storms off after being B-roll footage. And his wife... Oh, they're doing an interview. Like, with the news wants to interview Tess. Only Tess?
Yeah.
So she goes down and does an interview about the crossword puzzle tournament. And they want to get some B-roll. And the male yachter...
Alexander
storms off. And his wife claims he's just hangry.
Oh, that's right.
And she needs to go give him some crackers.
That's right. Some Pepsi and crackers.
Uh-huh. But at this point, I was thinking, at this point, Tess has promised to bring them treats multiple times.
Where are the treats?
She left the treats at the police station. So probably this guy was like...
Actually hangry.
My blood sugar's getting low. Should I eat some nuts or something? And his wife's like, no, Tess is going to bring... Let's wait. Like that's
Let's wait for the treats, Alexander.
Totally something I would do. I'd get excited about the treats. And then Tess finally shows up. Where are the treats? Pierre says that they just came onto the crossword scene a few months ago. And they share a passion for antiques. So again, this is how we need to start talking about people and our friends. And
this is Kat. She shares a passion for her two cats, Delta and Eve.
There's another mention that I totally missed that I will talk about shortly. But during this interaction, Harris calls and very frantically says he needs to talk to Tess, but not over the phone. And he also says, be careful, all of which sounds very urgent and ominous. Mm-hmm. But she takes a few beats to film some B-roll, get the scoop on the yachters, etc., before she ambles over to the office. And by then, the office has cleared out. And is the lights are all off and stuff. And she finds Harris dead.
Oh, but we also see a quick shot of Harris making a photocopy mm-hmm. and then accidentally leaving one of the copies on the printer.
Yeah, and Josephine's still there. And it seems like there's like still people in the office. Yeah. It's still a bit buzzy.
Yeah.
But Tess takes so long to get there that by the time she finally answers him and comes to see him, it's like everybody's gone and
yeah,
he's dead.
Yeah.
And Lacey Chabert does some excellent freaked out acting.
That was good. That was the best she did. I felt
like she sounded more believable on her 911 call than most people on Dateline.
Ooh, which is weird because they're the real ones.
Yeah. A lot of times they're not real though because
they're the murderer.
They're the murderer.
Mm-hmm. Dateline spoiler.
Tess really wishes she could have done something, like maybe meet him when he frantically asked her to instead of gossiping with Pierre.
And continuing to set up.
Mm-hmm. There was so much going on with the setup and then more setup. And Logan warns Tess to stay away from this one. Classic Hallmark, but he does drive her to Candace's to spend the night, which I thought was kind of cute. And then they like go hang out with Candace mm-hmm. and chat a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He comes up, which I thought was kind of fun. So the next day, Logan joins in on the endless tournament setup to scope out all the puzzlers who are joining, which I still don't know what's going on there, but all the men seem to be wearing purple.
Oh, I didn't recognize that either.
Logan is wearing a purple outfit, and then Pierre's wearing a really lovely purple Cardi tie combo that I thought was very becoming.
Hmm.
I was really into Pierre. I called him sharply dressed earlier. I was very into his outfits.
Well, his name's Pierre. Or...
Well,
we learn.
I guess clearly I'm easily drawn in.
By outfits.
So my next note is Corgi.
Who had the Corgi?
Oh my God. Are you serious?
Yeah, I don't remember.
The Corgi was the star of the film. Gwendolyn the Corgi?
Gwendolyn the Corgi was owned by...
Elaine.
Oh!
The Savage Art Dealer?
Yes.
Who we actually never see again.
Corgis kind of scare me.
What?
I don't know. Yeah.
Oh my God. Are they, it's like too much dog? They're like barrels, like sausages that are running towards you at a fast speed.
Yeah. And they like bite a lot.
Do they?
Yeah. And then like the queen owned a lot of them. And that's sort of weird for me.
Do you feel like corgis are a symbol of colonialism?
Yeah. And white supremacy maybe. So.
Oh, man.
I don't know. They have a lot of meaning for me, probably don't know their own place.
Oh, I grew up with a corgi mix.
Oh.
So I love corgis. I think they have the best face of any dog breed.
Hmm.
So friendly. Just so happy and smiley. And
they do have a natural smile.
I will say the no tail thing disturbs me.
Mm-hmm.
My dog I grew up with was misidentified as a beagle. She was clearly not in any way a beagle. She had a tail, like a full tail. She was a little like higher off the ground, a little bit like Banjo, my parents' dog.
Okay.
But there was a corgi in the office yesterday and it made my whole day. Her name was Daisy.
Oh.
And she was so fun. She would like sprint down the hall and she'd come and see me and...
Aww.
Got some snuggles in.
That's nice.
Such a great face.
That's nice.
Anyways, Tess is wearing an amazing long blazer that looks and probably feels like pajamas, but looks sharp as F.
I did. This one was better for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tess and Logan go to crash tea time between Candace and Elaine, the ex-art dealer that Alan had a fight with the day before the murder. But Elaine's assistant is outside chilling with the corgi, and somehow Logan knows that that's her assistant.
Slash driver.
Yeah.
Casting
call tough guy.
Yep. Curly hair, little he too long.
Definitely has been. I should have looked this up. He's totally been the guy during the cold open on Law & Order.
Oh, yes.
Who's like complaining about his girlfriend before tripping over a dead body.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's maybe in every cold open on Law & Order. We should check.
But even he can't help melting over Gwendolyn because she's so cute.
He did really like her.
Oh. He does tell them that Alan was selling stolen art. Which I can't do accents. Which is the last thing an art broker needs. Am I right?
Yeah. A lot of people know a lot about art broking. Breaking. Art breaking? Art brokering.
I didn't understand any of it.
Yeah.
Like it was totally lost.
It's like a lot of crossword puzzle jokes, a lot of art jokes, a lot of worlds I don't navigate in.
Yeah, it was kind of highfalutin for Hallmark, maybe. I also decided that corgis are really too friendly to be actors. Like the dog was not a good dog actor because they're just too friendly. They're just like smiling at everybody and wanting to say hi. You can tell that a real crossword puzzle person wrote this because the clues are super clever, and I would never have figured them out, especially the one Tess figures out to predict the next art theft.
Yeah, or to almost predict it.
Almost predict it, yes. So she thinks she knows when the next theft is going to be and when. So Logan and Tess go to dinner, which consists of two empty cups.
Yep.
On their table.
Yep.
While staking out the art gallery, Tess thinks will be hit next. And then they decide that Tess has noticed that there's a lot of nautical in the puzzles that the fake Abigail Krebs submits that have all been clues to the art thefts.
Yes.
That they all have kind of a British and a nautical theme.
Right.
Almost as if someone who writes them has a passion for sailing. And that's when I realized
Alexander
that Carmichael
and Elizabeth. Oh, Carmichael
said that he had a passion for sailing, but he delivered his lines so smoothly that I didn't even register it.
He did say that, but he was definitely lying, which was like how good of an actor he was.
I thought it was hilarious the way he delivered that line too.
It was perfect.
So I didn't even
notice. We love you, Jonathan Langdon, if you're listening.
New fan club, or maybe we can't assume he doesn't already have one.
That's true. He is phenomenal
outside of his family.
Also, Alexander and Elizabeth are yachters.
They are yachters,
and so
they know from about the ocean.
Yes,
we're previous
from
address
the country ocean. Of Atlantis. We've been down there for years. I bet you're about to get to this. Never mind. I'm going to hold off for a second.
No, I was just going to say that Pierre, again, is just like frantically, constantly calling Tess and demanding that she get down to the setup. And it was very
triggering. So much to set up.
So much to set up. Why? Like, we need you here.
Tess, why aren't you here? I passed the torch, Tess.
I gave you that pen.
I gave you that hug.
I was like, it was a little triggering, reminding me of some of the volunteers that work with me, who are like constantly demanding things of me, and they just need to chill a little bit.
Yeah.
But in all fairness, Tess is supposed to be running this event and is never there.
Right. True. And never has the treats.
And she forgot the GD treats,
yeah,
which would be very upsetting.
Yeah.
But she's missing the mixer, I think, at this point.
I think so.
So Tess and Logan do the classic midway through the movie bonding over a deceased parent. As per usual, she got into her career because of the deceased parent. And in this case, it's crosswords because of her dad. But during their bonding, Tess realizes that she made a wrong guess on the artist gallery, that it's actually not Picasso, it's Matisse.
Which, if she had done the down clues, she probably would have figured out. But apparently she doesn't really know how crossword puzzles work. So that was sort of a weird plot hole for me.
Okay. Well,
but we did need to see them at dinner, and that was the only way they could get together.
Yes.
Over empty cups.
A classic crossword mishap, and I appreciated that, you know, she's not perfect, because in these movies, our Hallmark heroines are usually, like, right every single time about everything.
Yeah, that's true.
So it made her a little more...
Well, I don't know if that's true. Human. Once again, this is all a first for me.
Logan chases down the thief, so they do go to the Matisse gallery then, and there is a theft in progress, and Logan does some great chasing, even though there were already cops that were staking out, that were actually ready to capture a thief, and mm-hmm. then they called officers over to it. But of course it's Logan who does the chase.
Yeah.
And it turns out to be Carmichael.
Heartbroken.
He was paid $5,000 to disable the alarms, but the real thief, he's only met twice. And we really, like, we can't blame Carmichael. He goes, of course, of extremely convincing. He's barely paid anything by the murder victim.
Who's very tight-fisted, a real Scrooge McDuck.
Uh-huh. So how could he say no to $5,000?
He couldn't.
So we get it.
He needed it to rebuild his church.
We get it. He probably had a real zany backstory there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So the real thief he describes as grungy, tan, athletic, with brown hair and chalk on his hands. So at this point, I took a break to get more pancakes and was trying to figure out how the chalk was going to eventually play out. But then when I got back...
It had already happened.
Logan immediately found the guy by checking the place where the rope was bought.
Right. Right. That was some, well, it was liquid. It was very easy.
I feel like they could have taken out, like, the typo scene.
Yeah.
And then maybe fleshed this part out a little bit.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
this was, they were like, oh, we're heading towards, like, the final part of this movie. We got to wrap this up. So the thief is a John Mayer doppelganger who rock climbs and steals art as a side hustle.
We all have to have a side hustle in New York.
Logan's gut says he's not the murderer, and that a second person came along to murder Alan, which would explain the time discrepancy between the break-in and the TOD.
Yep.
And we're just going to have to believe that Logan's gut is right, because he's solved more crimes than
anyone else on the force. Yes. Trust the gut.
John Mayer confirms Tessa's theory that the clues are in the puzzles. So she's right about that. And Tess asks to meet Logan at her gym, where she's playing ping pong against an elderly man.
Maybe Will Shorts.
She's working out some things, which is healthy. She's glowing with sweat. I just think about these scenes, like, is Lacey Chabert part of, like, an ambassador for table tennis, like,
internationally? Actually, maybe Will Shorts is
okay.
A table tennis enthusiast. The other option is that somebody on the crew had a bunch of ping pong tables, table tennis tables,
oh, yeah.
And was like, hey guys, we could do this. And everyone was like, yeah, why not? We have nothing better.
Because at this point, she's got a full-time job. She's supposed to be running a very large, apparently, crossword puzzle tournament.
Multi-day.
And she's also trying to, like, solve this murder at the same time. But she's, like, taking a pause to... just head down to the gym and just work it all out on the ping pong court.
Yep.
Which I guess is a good lesson.
Place.
Because I often think, oh, I'm too busy. I have too much going on to exercise or do other things that are good for me. So mm-hmm. maybe this is, she just has really good self-care.
Yeah.
I wrote this a while ago. I'm supposed to be working on anger. And I was given a list of healthy ways to express anger. And the list was screaming in your car with the windows up, beating a pillow, screaming into a pillow. It was a lot of like pillow-based activities. And then the last one was playing tennis.
The sound of that.
So she's on.
Whack.
Yeah, didn't really quite go with the others, but clearly that's how Tess is just working through some things. She does have to change clothes.
She's too sweaty.
Before she'll talk to Logan, even though she invited him down there to talk.
Yeah.
And she had to change into workout clothes to play ping pong.
Wow.
I guess. Her little workout outfit.
Maybe it was like hot ping pong, like hot yoga.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're walking and, oh, that's when we have the Will Shorts cameo.
Right.
I think.
Maybe.
That was real, real obvious.
Yep. Hey, can we get our ball back or what?
They're walking and doing a little suspect chat, and they don't stop and look before crossing an alley, and a truck comes barreling out, and Logan has to save Tess.
Oh, yeah.
And then on their drive home, Logan gets to share his deceased relative's story and how that drove him to his current career. His brother was a cop and was killed making an arrest. So he says that makes him personally invested in each case, which actually doesn't sound super sustainable.
No, especially if he's solved more crimes than anyone else on the force. It's a lot of investment spread out over a lot of years and a lot of dead people.
He needs some ping pong.
He really needs the ping pong.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the V-neck workout clothes.
Logan stays outside Tessa's building all night. Like to watch out for her.
Oh, yeah.
And she makes it worth his while with her third leather jacket.
This one didn't even register for me.
It was like a muted powder blue.
Almost
a gray.
Yep.
We finally get to see the crossword tournament, which literally would have taken 3 hours to set up, mostly by hotel staff.
Right. Who are paid to do that.
Yes. Logan has Tess give a practice round with a puzzle that would set a trap for the Phantom puzzler. But then they don't seem to check. And also, like, she stayed up. In addition to all the stuff she's doing, she wrote a whole new puzzle.
Overnight,
just for this practice round to try to catch the person.
Mm-hmm.
And then they don't check to see how anyone did on the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, they do go through all the answers, which had to have taken like a half hour. And then they just wait to see if someone balls up their paper in disgust.
Which somebody does. And to my shock, it was Alexander, the yachter.
Yeah, he was a real
who knew a lot about nautical terms, but not on this crossword puzzle.
And you think that the organizers and volunteers like that would be disqualified from the competition? But they're participating. They seem to be really like one third of the people who were there.
Well, you can't keep paying extras.
Logan finds out from Gwendolyn's handler that Elaine's black SUV matched the truck that ran them down, and it has damage and matches the license plate. Tess overhears, because she didn't actually check anyone's puzzles, that Pierre got a nearly perfect score. And then they realize the movie's about to end and they got to wrap this up. So,
like, fast.
So she immediately finds the extra copy that Harris had left in the copier that had an article, like a really old article of Alan and Pierre as.
But it was actually Alan and
Chesley.
Nightingale.
Chesley Nightingale.
And probably when they were like 20.
Or younger,
in some kind of rowboating competition. And she immediately was like, this grainy black and white photo of a man 70 years younger has to be Pierre. Or Chesley. Not Chelsea. Chesley.
Chesley Nightingale. Yes, she immediately figures that out. He was presumed. This is where things really fall apart, and I really couldn't. I watched it twice, and I couldn't figure it out. He was presumed dead?
Yes, he was presumed dead.
But why did they make him dead? Why did he have to go
dead? Because they were like art heist aficionados, and he needed to not be linked to Alan at all.
But like back in the day, they were art heist.
I think they've been doing this for decades.
So maybe. Then how was Alan a respected art gallery owner if he was already known as a young man as an art heister?
Yeah, great question.
So, and then at some point, Pierre or Chesley goes to prison?
Oh, yeah, because he learned how to get out coded notes in prison.
But then I was confused about the timeline because he's supposed to be like a prominent figure in the crossword scene for many years. He's been running this tournament for years, and that's why he's like all dramatic about stepping down.
Right.
So like he's clearly has like a high profile. He's been out in the world doing stuff. When was he in prison? Okay. Maybe that's how he did his art heist back in the day. Was through the coded crossword puzzles.
Oh, right.
And even though he's out in the open now, he still does it that way just because because he's a puzzle head.
He just loves them.
It's just so fun.
Can't get enough.
Yeah.
Real thrill.
So he continued the art heist thing with the puzzle clues.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still out and about as Pierre. And nobody recognized him. And he just happened to be
in the same
from Newport where the Red Herring twins claimed to be from.
Yeah.
Which is how he knew about the beach or whatever.
Yeah. No, there was a lot of shoehorning going on.
Yeah. Okay, so he was a silent partner with Alan, stealing art from Alan's gallery, collecting insurance, and then selling the paintings overseas.
Mm-hmm.
But Alan got greedy and tried selling one to Elaine and got caught, so Pierre killed him.
Right.
Which is why when Alan saw him, he said, he gave his, oh, it's you face.
Oh, it's you, my brother who's been faking his own death for years.
But then also being really prominent as this other person who's clearly very recognizable as the younger person.
Right.
Oh, boy. Okay. Okay, there's just lots of questions that we had to endure his emotional retirement speech.
Yeah.
Because supposedly he'd been there for a long time.
It mattered.
How did he know how to fake an IP address?
Prison, probably.
To send the Abigail Krabs. I also, did Abigail Krabs, does that mean anything to you? I tried to figure out what that meant, but.
No.
The Krebs cycle.
There is the Krebs cycle.
That's all I could come up with.
It sounds a bit like crabs, which might have been passed around in prison.
Or
eaten on Newport Beach.
If you're from the ocean.
Oh, yeah. True.
Okay, my other question is, how did he kill Harris when he was gossiping mm-hmm. with Tess?
So that was my big question, was actually who did kill Harris? Because Chesley Pierre never gone during the time that Harris died. And no one really seemed to care about solving the murder of Harris specifically. It was like we're just all still really focused on solving the murder of Alan. But Harris was supposedly beloved even.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know who killed Harris. It appears to have been Chesley Pierre, but when? And also, why was he carrying bullet casings in his bag this whole time?
Because he's a sicko.
Throw him in the Long Beach River. I don't. What's in New York?
The East River.
Throw him in the East, Pierre. What are you doing?
He's got to put him in his little owl.
His little trinket, his bullet casing trinket.
And carry around with him in his little satchel.
For days.
Because, well, he's frantically setting up for
he doesn't have time to get to the east. The Hudson. That's the other one.
Yes.
The Brooklyn Bridge. He could have gone to the, probably, the Brooklyn Bridge and tossed him. I don't know, New York.
That
should be obvious.
He's just a sicko and he likes
the jingle jangle of
killing,
bullet
but
casings.
He doesn't, because he was actually really apologetic about bringing Tess into the whole thing.
Yeah, he was also very apologetic about pre-murdering her. I'm really sorry, Tess.
I tried really,
really sorry. I tried really hard not to kill you. I tried so hard.
You thought I was being real annoying by calling you and calling you and calling you and demanding that you come down.
That
to
was
the mixer.
Me trying hard not to kill you. Mm-hmm. But here we are, regardless.
It's your fault.
It's your fault.
So he's about to shoot Tess on the roof. And of course, Logan pops in right on time and fully spins Pierre like in the air, taking him down. So props to Pierre's stunt double, because he really went for it.
Yeah, you can't do that to an 80-year-old man.
And then we find out Alexander and Elizabeth are in witness protection for unknown reasons.
Yeah. What?
The mob?
A yachting? Oh, no, that would have been their new persona.
Yeah, were they really even yachters? We don't even know. They were really from the ocean.
God, I mean, what FBI agent helped them come up with the
oh
backstory
God. Also, by
from
the way,
ocean?
Well, also, like, the guy that told Chauncey, which is the chief's name.
Oh, right.
Is that allowed? Doesn't that
no,
seem like a
and
very...
I feel like I know this because I recently read an intense crime thriller specifically about witness protection.
Ooh.
and the U.S. Marshal Service. And, like, how it's so secretive. Like, those files are so secret. Like, you cannot access them. Like, the president himself, or maybe one day even herself, could not access them. And so, no, I do not believe that Chauncey could have just casually got a hot tip from his FBI buddy that, like, oh, Alexander and Elizabeth, they're totally in witness protection. This is the thing. They were, like, walking their bulldog one day, their bulldog named Evelyn, and Evelyn ran after a squirrel, and then the squirrel led them to a dead body, and someone was burying the dead body, and it was the King of Arabia, and now we have to have them in witness protection because all of Arabia is after Alexander and Elizabeth. That's what I feel like Hallmark would maybe like. I don't feel like they really know that Arabia doesn't exist, and so I feel like that's the direction they'd go. But now Chauncey knows everything. Their cover's blown. They're going to have to find a new ocean to be from.
So dangerous.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, and also, like, if you're in witness protection, like, is New York City, like, a good place to be? And then...
And is volunteering at a crossword event really, like, the first move you want to make in your new life?
Yeah. I feel like probably you want to keep a low profile. Like, that's the ultimate excuse to just sit at home and watch TV all day, right?
Right. Who knows? Eat whatever
just,
you want.
They're real puzzle heads.
Or that's part of their new packs. Well, if you could be anything, what would you want to be? A crossword puzzle enthusiast.
Because clearly he's not
and
very...
And from the ocean.
Clearly he's not very good at it, because like even that practice round, he was like, ugh.
It's like the FBI
this
guy let,
so
his,
hard.
Let his four-year-old daughter make up their backstory. She's like, I think they should be from the ocean, Daddy. He's like, that checks out. Place of origin, the ocean.
A Victorian cottage.
Off of Bradley's Bethany Beach.
Actually, that's very Murder, She Wrote. Is like her, she has a little Victorian cottage in Cabot Cove. I bet that's where that came from. Also, there's that whole, like, they're antique dealers or something, and then they went to the funeral to, like, draw business.
It's kind of like, you know, if you were creating your witness protection identity, you would not craft it like it was a Hallmark character identity, which is, like, antique dealer slash yachter from the ocean in Newport Beach who also loves crossword puzzles. Like, you would be like a Starbucks barista who likes to play with my dog on the weekends. Like, why are you? That's a lot of attention to draw to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Or just woman who hangs out at home and quilts.
Sure.
I think that's, well, that's the one I would choose.
Let the government buy you a quilting machine.
Yeah, for real. Okay, so by the end, Tess has upgraded Logan to a Saturday puzzle. And I would like to note, as much as I adore Lacey Chabert, she has the worst fake laugh in the world that kind of hurts me every time. It's kind of like, ha, ha, ha. It was. She does it. I think she did it about 12 times in this movie.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah.
It always takes me out of the moment, I think, unfortunately. And then they have a very awkward goodbye that lets you know that they want to spend more time together, but don't want to make it a fish.
Yet.
Yet.
Yet, dear viewers / listeners.
Okay, so that is the end of the first Crossword movie. Did you have any personal cats coming out of personal bags in this film?
The only thing was that it wasn't even really personal. It was just that I had just read a book on witness protection. Mm. And so when that came up, I felt livid at this FBI person who had blown the cover of these poor ocean loving yachters. So that was sort of the only thing that really resonated for me. That and the fact that the lead, Logan O'Connell?
O'Connor.
Oh, yeah, because all cops are Irish. That he looked like a Borzoi dog, and they have really strange skeletons, which I like skeletons.
Oh, okay.
So I guess my personal cats were just mostly aesthetic this time.
Okay.
What about you?
I feel like the scene of the yachter storming off, either because he didn't want to be part of B-roll or he had low blood sugar, really struck a chord. I feel like that's
Have you ever stormed off?
I've wanted to. We were making this video for work, and the videographer is really intense. And he's psychotic about B-roll, collecting B-roll. And so I can see that might happen by the time this video is completed.
Yeah, working on a set is not for the weak.
And I guess I wasn't there, but apparently at one event he came and he got up really close up into someone's face during one of our trainings. And Alicia had to intervene and get him to set down. He was being really, the woman was like really freaked out by it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a theme that we talk about over and over, I feel like, in our personal life journeys. But I do sort of appreciate that he was able to, like, physically manifest his frustration with whatever it happened to be. Just thoroughly by just, like, storming off. Like, I sometimes think I would love to storm off, but the best I can do, because of my heritage, is an Irish goodbye. And I'm sort of impressed by that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Goals. And then also when Tess is really beating herself up over making the wrong crossword guess in the cafe when she realizes that she got the wrong word, because she's been so busy, her mind isn't working right. And that.
Oh, she hasn't had time to play ping pong lately.
That's my life. Lately, is that exact scene over and over and over again every day.
I don't think that you're wrong all the time.
Well, it's just more that, like, I don't have the mental capacity or space to, like, connect dots in a way that, like, makes things go well or the way they're supposed to, or, you know.
Well, remember when you were sleeping, like, 12 to 14 hours a night for
a
while?
I still am, yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure if that was still happening for you. Just really want to applaud you for that. That's maybe a tiny crown moment that I'm leading into for you.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know if maybe that was contributing to your inability to connect dots. Maybe we need to do crossword puzzles more and or connect the dot activities.
Should we just do the across clues?
In cursive.
In cursive. Should we also do the down clues?
If I was doing just the across clues in cursive, based on the very nature of a crossword puzzle, I would have no clue if they were correct. So,
yeah, I do recycle a lot of half-done crossword puzzles.
I got really into them for a while. Like, had one of those little booklets that I'm not sure where you buy them.
Okay.
They just, like, appear in your home sometimes. Like, 500 crossword puzzles. Easy, medium, hard. And, I don't know who puts them there.
Old ladies.
Yeah, but I don't invite old ladies to my home, but somehow they make it in there.
Okay. That's a real aunt thing.
Yeah, and I'm an aunt now for actually 12 years now. And so maybe that's me manifesting my aunt energy into these crossword puzzle books. But got really into them. Almost too into them. And I don't care to elaborate further.
Okay. We'll just leave it at that. Is that why maybe this particular mystery series is triggering for you?
It's possible.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll see if we can turn you around.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe next personal cat will have some
breakthroughs.
Some breakthroughs. Yeah.
Who were you attracted to in this movie?
Well, as I just keep mentioning, Logan's nose.
Okay.
I really liked it. I also would have given Harris a run for his money. I like those curls.
Yeah, for sure.
Pierre looked evil the whole time, but I still didn't suspect him, which I was a little upset about. I wasn't attracted to Pierre. I was attracted specifically to his hair.
I thought he was very handsome and charming, and I loved his outfits.
Yeah. Oh, Josephine's hair was really cute. Mm-hmm. Like, it was really pretty, like, sleek French twist type of situation, which she wore very well.
Mm-hmm. Unsung hero. She's the one that saved Tess's life.
Yeah.
By awkwardly stepping out into the hallway, seeing Pierre lead her away with a gun, and just being like, okay.
Well, maybe when Logan gets here, I'll just mention this to him.
But I'll wait till he asks.
Yeah, I'm not going to lead with that. That's a little pushy. And I'm a woman. A lady.
Under who I was attracted to, I went for Gwendolyn because she's so cute.
The dog?
I just wanted to pat her.
Oh, so we're not specifically sexually attracted.
I think last time mine was Malta, the country of Malta. So.
Oh, that's right. I've really been digging into, like, who I find physically attractive.
But I think that's what we're supposed to be doing.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll migrate away. I like the idea of opening that up a little, like, kind of pan attracting. Like, I'm attracted to countries, dogs, noses.
Skeletons.
Oh, yes.
Okay, fanfic for side characters. I actually really wanted, like, a comma drama about the family funeral home that went out of business after 47 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, kind of like in the vein of, did you see Skeleton Twins or...
No.
You know, kind of like one of those indie films that's like a little lighthearted, but it's about a very serious... It's like a family and they've had like...
Oh, like the Addams Family.
Maybe, or 6 Feet Under. I never saw 6 Feet Under.
I didn't either.
Is it about, does the funeral, their funeral home go out of business?
Or are they gravediggers? Or
they have a funeral
home. Oh, okay. I don't know the premise. I mean, clearly I dove in hard to the Alexander and Elizabeth witness protection fanfic angle. And I think I would maybe love to write that story. Except for the fact that the two of them are the worst. And I don't have a good reason to feel that way. But I feel like, you know, if I did write it, it would be about how they were kind of the worst and that's how they found this murder. And then they went into witness protection and they are like attempting growth. But maybe at the end, they remain the worst. I don't know. We'll get there.
Or it's just like maybe it's just so new because like before they were they had big personalities and a lot going on. Mm-hmm. And now they're having to like put on these new personas and they're still not sure the details yet or like how to behave in this new situation. So instead all they can do is just like sit around in hotel ballrooms and just sort of squirm and look very suspicious and
sip on tasty freezes, suck on chili dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows?
Invasion of the Hallmark Body Snatchers. Kind of NA because Barbara Niven plays the same character on Murder, She Baked in a lot of movies.
Okay.
But it is a little disorienting because Lacey Chabert and Brennan Elliott play a couple in other movies. And they actually have like a trilogy, a series where they're the same couple over three movies. And it goes through like they're falling in love, them getting married. Mm. They buy a charming country inn and there's lots of mishaps. But they're very in love the whole time. And so that's a little disorienting. So maybe like, I think that having seen them in that context does shade this experience a little bit.
Okay.
How did you find their steam level?
Oh, just tepid AF.
Okay.
There was nothing there. I just could not have cared less about their chemistry or interactions the whole time. So I really, what I'm hoping for, because I'm, you know, trying to focus on like growth and hope mindsets in my life personally. So maybe that's another personal cat, is I hope for their steam level to like begin a steady evaporation, but a hot one.
Mm-hmm.
But I worry that I'll be disappointed, but yet I will persist.
Okay.
Well, radical optimism.
You do know how these, the mystery series do build.
Yes.
You got to start at zero and then you got to just slowly bring it up to 11.
Yeah. I think I have a high standard now based on my first Hallmark murder mystery series viewing and that's what I'm going to benchmark things to, perhaps.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Reach for the stars. Have you had any Hallmark IRL moments lately?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think, yeah, I have a new boyfriend.
Woo!
And he's so great. And so... I don't really know. Maybe there's a Hallmark moment in there, but kind of just like, I think like I'm wandering around with that feeling of like, I'm doing my Lacey Chabert New York City walk like all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's like always a song playing in my head and my elbows are skipping around and I'm like, I gotta get there. I gotta go to work. I gotta go to the store. And everything kind of feels like really exciting. So I think that's my Hallmark IRL.
And are you having like those sort of new relationship bonding?
Oh, totally.
Conversations over like, yeah, this thing.
Yeah, this thing and that thing we went through. And
that's
then like,
why I'm this and that's why I do this.
And this is why you do that. And then the thing of like, you do that, I do that. But it's so way cuter in person.
You share a passion for X number of things.
We do, yeah. And also sort of like one of those things where like our paths probably could have crossed at multiple points in the last several years. Like but didn't until like the time was right.
Hmm.
And so that's been a cool, we keep discovering little crossings that we could have made.
That's very Hallmark.
Yeah.
It would have been a montage, like at the very beginning, mm-hmm. where like you all keep like...
Like I drop my coffee and bend over as he walks by in the rain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But checks his watch so he doesn't see me or he would have helped me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then you're coming out of the coffee shop, but you're holding your... Because you're actually going to deliver your treats. So
right.
So you're holding like a couple dozen apple tarts and your coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And someone opens holds the door open for you, but he gets like tied up in the, like there's a dog walker.
Oh yeah.
And so he gets caught up
in the leash. Mm-hmm, yeah.
And just misses you.
Yeah.
And it's to the tune of like in the background, what song would be playing?
Mm, like probably maybe like a Kina Grannis song. Something kind of like peppy and like poppy. Or that song from the, it's from that movie where, oh, is it called Oliver in the City? The little animated movie about the little dog or cat that gets lost.
Oh, yeah, what was that movie called?
Oliver.
I think
it was just called
Oliver.
Oliver.
Yeah.
Oliver, like, and Friend. Oliver and
Oliver
Company.
And Friends. Oh, Oliver and Company. Yeah, yeah.
Some song from that movie, but not the sad one. Any Hallmark IRL for you?
Absolutely not. No.
Okay. Yeah. Soon.
Yeah. One day.
One day.
That's why we have Hallmark.
Yeah.
So that we can live those moments when real life is not presenting them.
Yeah.
I have a free trial to the Hallmark Now app or something like mm-hmm. that through Friendly. So apparently all the garage sale mysteries are on there. So I might check those out. Although I feel weird about Lori Loughlin.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. My friend who has this, shares it with me or whatever, is thought that she would feel weird about it. But she just like immediately was brought back to Aunt Becky.
Okay.
So I don't know. I'll give those a try and see how it goes, and maybe we can cover them.
Maybe they'll be on here one day, and we'll discuss the ins and outs of a real life crime when we go into our Hallmark IRL for her.
Mm-hmm.
Reverse Hallmark IRL.
Maybe more it would veer towards Lifetime.
Yes.
Which is the dark shadow of Hallmark.
Yes. But, you know, we all have dark shadows. And that's okay. Because
shadow self.
Yeah, but, you know, they reflect, like, the light that does exist inside of us. And so mm-hmm. Hallmark versus Lifetime, you know, you couldn't have one without the other.
Yeah, and sometimes you need to indulge in one or the other. Okay, so we still haven't found a good ending for our podcast, so...
Nope. So that was it.
Ciao.
Ciao.